You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to our show. Now in our 31st year of continuous political talk, the John C. Scott Political Forum on this August 20th. With me in studio, Randy Dorman, who is obviously a candidate for mayor of our town. And then we'll talk with Jimmy Zoo in Washington, D.C. Jeff Rogers will be with us, former chair of the Democratic Party. Shelley Fishman talks about, are we marching toward a recession? And then Tom Przelsky, a part of the executive committee of the Democratic Party, will be with us. And it's a very jam-packed show. Randy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back again.
This is almost here.
7 days.
That's really amazing.
And ballots have to be mailed back by tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, right.
By tomorrow. So it's heating
up. So, woulda, coulda, shoulda, did you get everything done you needed to do? I mean, you can look back and go, you did everything you can.
We ran exactly the race that we wanted to. We had to start by building name recognition. But most importantly, we wanted this to be a race that was about vision and real ideas, not political rhetoric. We thought that people had had enough of negative campaigning and empty promises. I am all about getting things done and setting vision. So that's what we did. We've run on this consistent message from day one, haven't wavered, and we've done a great job.
You know, the one thing I think that's so very important is the fact that these folks that you're running against, Steve Farley in the legislature for 12 years, and of course, Raheena Romero, Ward 1 councilperson for 12 years. They had an established name ID. You didn't. You had to go get that.
I had to go get that, but I really felt that it was time for a change. When I look at Tucson and where we should be, what we should be doing, we cannot have the same old ideas and the same people doing them. So I really felt Tucson was ready for a change. Tucson should be a thriving 21st century city that is rooted in its culture and its heritage. That's the plan that I put together, and that's what we've been talking about from the beginning.
What was a shock to a great many people is the Arizona Daily Star endorsed you. That was a glowing endorsement as well. They
said, vote for her.
She's qualified to be mayor.
I was so proud of that endorsement. And in one sense, it was surprising because of the longtime relationship that they've had with the other candidates. But in another sense, they endorsed me very specifically because they said I had the vision to move Tucson forward and the real idea is not the rhetoric to get us there. They said a big picture thinker who has the grounded details to bring her vision to life. And like I said, that is what I've tried to do from the beginning. That is what Tucson deserves, because that is the only thing that is going to move us forward, that is going to get us out of this cycle of 24% poverty, of low job growth and low wages. And everything that we want for this community involves creating a healthier economy, planning for growth in a smart way, and focusing on sustainability. And those are my top three priorities.
You know, it seems to me that you did not expect this last-minute money that flowed into Raheena Romero's campaign, well over $750,000. Nobody expected that.
Right.
When you first learned of it, did that change your campaign at all? Did it alter the course that you had taken or that you were going to take?
So it did not alter our course, because we had a strong message, and my background is in global branding, and I know that you set your message, and unless there's something wrong with it, you stay on message and you stay focused. I've been involved in a lot of organizations and in leadership roles, and I always start by reminding people what our mission is and to stay focused on the task and not be distracted by the swirl. And the amount of money that has poured into this race is extraordinary, but it's also just swirl. And I think Tucsonans are smarter than to be distracted by that. I give them more credit than that. And I hope that they're coming to my campaign because they see that I am an adult with good judgment and good plans. And that's what we need from leaders, not ones who get caught up in the swirl.
I don't think anybody in this town wants this mayor's race to be bought by somebody, especially
an
out-of-town interest.
Yeah, that would be unfortunate.
I think it would be unfortunate, seriously, no matter what. I've said all along, I've never seen anything like this. I've done this for 50 years in this town. I've followed a lot of mayoral races all the way back to Jim Corbett in the late 60s, and I've never seen anything like it. And I don't, we've never been here before, and it's going to be interesting to see how much effect this has on the outcome.
And really, politics is always changing. I think 2016 surprised a lot of people, and then they came out in 2018. There are many more people involved in paying attention, but that also means outside groups are more involved in paying attention. So I think it'll be very interesting to see if how the money influences the results. But I know that I've run a positive campaign based on issues and vision, and I think that's what people here deserve.
You've been walking too, and I've said, oh my goodness, you can't really walk
you
the whole
town. You told me that from the beginning. I said I'm going to walk the whole city.
I know, but and, you know, and I'm going, well, nobody can do that, and because it's hot and it's a tiring, a tedious job, I think, to go. And a lot of people enjoy it. They knock on doors.
It's my favorite part of running.
But it's hot. Did you ever notice that?
Oh my God. This weekend, each day I was walking for 7 or 8 hours and making 3 hours of phone calls. And on Sunday, I have to say, I was so thirsty by the end.
I had to stop at a friend's house and refill
my water. But I've been walking at least 3 days a week since February in all of the different wards.
You learn something from that effort, don't you?
It is really something. And people invite you into their homes. They tell you what's important to them. And to me, that's been the most meaningful because I created my plans based on what people told me was important to them and how we could help. So the walking has been my absolute favorite part. I went for a couple of hours this morning after this interview. I'm going to go again. So watch out. You might see me at your door.
So what are the top issues that people instructed you to follow and to do something about? Was it the pothole in front of their street? Was it the safety of their children? What was it?
It really varies somewhat by neighborhood, somewhat by age, depending on if you have kids or not. People, of course, are concerned about potholes and public safety. A lot of people are concerned about education, and many, many people really just see Tucson going in circles, and year after year just going in circles, and they're tired of it. They're really ready for a change. So we created our plan based on creating change that's going to get us out of this cycle of poverty, the cycle of low wages. Many parents are concerned about education, and I am too. But I do think we owe it to the electorate to be honest about what mayor and council can actually do regarding education. We do not set the budget. We don't have any direct influence. But we can absolutely support educational support programs. I have ideas for how we can lobby the legislature using my existing relationships as well as building new ones. But I think it's disingenuous when the candidates go on and on about how they're going to refund education when they don't have direct control over that. And I've always tried to be more responsibility.
Sure.
So at every turn, I've tried to be very honest, even when it's hard, even when the answers aren't what people want to hear. I want to tell them how things actually work, because if we don't have a baseline of that understanding, we can't solve the problems together.
Well, I had told you before we walked into the studio, if you lose this primary, you have a
I'm not planning on losing.
I understand that. But you have a great political future.
Oh, well,
you have impressed an enormous amount of people.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
And if Raina loses, she has no future, because I think this dark money has tainted this race. Now, that doesn't have anything to do with you, I guess. Maybe it will as the votes are counted. But the point is, I think you need to run a campaign that you're proud of, and a campaign that contributes to the dialogue of a community that needs the dialogue to be able to move forward.
Thank you for saying that. That is 100% true. And in entering this race, I entered because I thought that I had skills and experience that were going to really move Tucson in the right direction, skills and experience that the other candidates did not have. And my two goals were, first, to win, and become mayor and really be able to have positive impact and make positive change. My secondary goal was to elevate the conversation about what is possible in Tucson, because too often we think that we can't do it or we don't deserve enough. I mean, our roads have holes in it, and it's a reflection of how we feel about ourselves. We deserve better, and I wanted to make sure that we elevated the conversation of what is possible in Tucson.
Charles Heller is a caller to our show, and Charles, you're with Randy Dorman.
Yes.
Ms. Dorman, I love your positivity about Tucson and the way you express yourself. And one of the things I always like to talk about are the roots of people's understanding of government. And if you are elected, one thing you'll have to do is swear an oath to uphold the Constitution. And I wondered if you've had a chance yet to look up or to know Arizona's the stated purpose of government according to Arizona's Constitution.
According to Arizona's constitution, I have not...
What is the stated... That's okay.
I haven't specifically, but regarding Tucson, I was on the Charter Review Committee twice, so very in-depth knowledge about our charter, more than I would even like.
Right. Well, I was referring to the organization that grants Tucson its charter of the state of Arizona.
Sure.
But that's okay. I'll do that with you off the air, because there's a wonderful chance for people to learn about it, and it's a really good idea.
Thank you
for your forum, John. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Charles. Well, this is a campaign that's coming down to just the last week, and there's not a lot you can do that you haven't done. But I assume you just continue the course of walking every day and talking to as many people. I lost a race by about 60-some votes. And it haunted me for 40-some years, and I don't want anybody to lose by that much.
Right.
400 is good. 4,000 is good, but 40, no, you don't want to do that.
No, but
you cover all the bases, really.
We have a whole team walking and calling. If anybody would like to help us, just email us at randyformayor.com. We can put you to work tonight, this weekend, any day. We have canvassing and phoning and some fun themes to do that over the weekend. My cute mom has been out there.
I saw her picture.
Every day. Every day she knocks on
mom
50.
Mom came back from the East Coast to do this,
yes,
right?
Every day she knocks on 50 to 100 doors.
Gee, Mom.
And
wow.
She loves it, and I can't tell you how many people come up to me throughout Tucson and say, "Your mom knocked on my door. I ran into your mom, and your mom was wearing your shirt."
That's so cool.
Yeah, so it's a family affair. My daughter is 15. She is an excellent phone banker, and my husband's been putting all of my signs out with friends. So it's been
a family
really
affair,
something.
Isn't
yes,
it?
Absolutely.
All right, take a minute and a half, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and tell people who you are and why you are running for mayor of the city, and what you will do if you're elected.
Oh,
go ahead.
Sure. Okay.
I will not interrupt you.
Well, I'm Randy Dorman, and I am running for mayor of Tucson because I think that Tucson has so much potential, and I get frustrated that so often we settle for the status quo. We don't aim high enough, and we do not translate our potential into opportunity. And I was originally from New York, where I had a big career in global branding and advertising. I've worked with multi-billion-dollar multinational companies, helping them grow. I've been here since 2001. My husband was born and raised here. His family had been here for a long time. His dad was a Tucson police officer. And we moved into downtown Tucson in 2001, very specifically, because we saw what downtown could be, and it was a drag on Tucson, as not just the city, but really the region. We were losing so many of our grads that we spent so much time educating, and we saw that a vibrant downtown could really change that. So a few months after I moved here, we bought an old ice factory on the edge of downtown with two of our friends and turned it into the Ice House Lofts, which was Arizona's first loft conversion. 51 units, we still live there. It was a 1920s ice factory, and I think it's a metaphor for Tucson because it had been a vibrant, vital part of the community. It serviced the Fruit Express Railroad. It had incredible texture and materials. But by the time we saw it, times had changed, technology had changed, and it was in complete disrepair. And somebody else, I think, would have torn it down, but we honored its past, restored what we could, added new elements, and now it is relevant for generations to come. And that's how we have to approach Tucson. Really appreciate our history and our culture, build on that, but also know that we have to be looking forward. We have to have real plans for how Tucson becomes a thriving 21st century city, and real plans, not empty promises. And that's what I plan to do. If you go to my website, which is randyformayor.com, and go to my vision page, you can download, I have 14 pages of real plans, well thought out, well researched. And if you have any questions, email me through the website and I'm happy to answer them.
Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for running.
Thank you very much, Jen. We're a lot better community, Jen.
Because you're running.
Oh, that means a lot to me. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you, this campaign has degenerated into something that I don't think anybody expected. Or wanted, you know.
I think we deserve better.
But your campaign has not changed from the moment you started.
Not from the day we started.
This is who I am. This is what I believe. This is how I will be a mayor. Elect me. It just didn't change. I think the other campaigns had to change because of the dark money that's just insidious. It really is. It's a terrible thing that's happened to our town. And we're going to have to address that as a public as to whether that's what we want in our politics.
Address it with your vote.
There you go. Thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Randy Dorman, candidate for mayor on the John C. Scott Political Forum. Jimmy Zuma in Washington, D.C., next on the John C. Scott Show. This portion of the John C. Scott Political Forum brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You can call Mike Emery, the owner of Perfection Auto Works, at 323-8650. This is the place I trust to repair my car and my family's car. I'm John C. Scott, and I've been telling you that I recommend Perfection Auto Works because of three reasons. Mike Emery is an honest mechanic. Believe it or not, there's one left. Mike Emery is a fair mechanic, and his professionals are the best in the business of repairing cars. There's hundreds of options when it comes to auto repair in Tucson, Arizona, but there's only one Perfection Auto Works. Each service technician is ASE certified. Customer reviews online for your inspection. I'm proud to recommend Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You can call him at 323-8650. I'm John C. Scott. I trust Mike Emery to prepare my car and your car as well. Call Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650. You'll be very, very glad you did. Let's go to Washington, D.C., and Jimmy Zuma, our Washington, D.C. correspondent. He covers the nation and the world from the nation's capital. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, John. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. Tell me what's going on, and I'll get out of your way. What's happening from Washington, please?
Well, let me see. There's a lot going on. Obviously, one of the big stories is Planned Parenthood's decision to drop out of Title X. You know, 4 million patients are served by Title X and exist to provide healthcare to low-income women, particularly reproductive health care. And of those 4 million women, 40% are served by Planned Parenthood. So it's a big deal when Planned Parenthood says they're getting out. They basically said, you know, Alexis McGill Johnson, who's the acting president, said the new Title X requirements that Trump is imposing, and what those requirements are, is that you can no longer, you will have to pretend like abortion doesn't exist as a healthcare choice anymore.
Wow.
You can't mention abortion. You can't refer people for abortions. You can't give that as an option for dealing with a pregnancy. So McGill Johnson said that's an unethical and dangerous gag rule, and they can't provide a competent medical practice under those terms.
So who's going to serve these women now? How do they get the information they need?
Well, that's interesting. It's not only Planned Parenthood. You know, the governments of Hawaii, Illinois, New York, Oregon, Illinois, New York, Oregon, and Washington, as well as Maryland and Massachusetts, are no longer going to be participating in Title X. So to the extent that they don't have the funding to provide those services, a lot of those women will be out. Some of them will have to wait longer. Some of them will have to travel farther. Some of them will have unwanted pregnancies and have children they can't afford to take care of.
Let me ask you.
Is telling doctors what to say.
What is this march toward a recession and the idea that Trump says, no, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to let it happen. How could he stop it? What's next?
Scared. He is so scared about this, John. It's kind of unbelievable. You know, all signs point to a recession sometime before the next election. And that really is the last thing Trump has going for him, the idea that we have a solid economy. Now, he inherited a terrific economy from the Obama administration and has been subsequently squandering it with his, particularly with his China trade kerfluffle, which has only hurt Americans. And we've paid $68 billion into government coffers in a futile attempt to make China change their policies, which they're not going to do. So he's hurting American companies. American manufacturing has actually dropped in the last year from a 4% growth rate to a 1% growth rate. The last time it was that low was in 2013. It wasn't that low in any years of the Obama administration except 2013 or any years of the Trump administration so far. So things are trending in a wrong direction. You know, we had that 800-point drop in the Dow over fears of Trump's trade war. And so Trump is doing what he does now. He's blaming the media for creating a story that doesn't exist. And he's blaming the Fed. Now, this is a new thing. He wants the Fed to drop interest rates. Now, the Fed's interest rate is currently about 2.5%. So what Trump is saying is that he can't sustain an economy where your savings of your cash in the bank make 2%. And that's what he's telling you. You can't make 2% interest and have an economy that's not in recession. And that's pretty pathetic.
Let me go to Debbie on our phone lines. Debbie, welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. You're with Jimmy Zuma in Washington. Go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi, Debbie.
I had a comment about you were discussing the Planned Parenthood and the new rules that so that they're not going to accept that funding. You know, this is going to sound weird. I am glad that they're doing that. I think that one of the ways to fight some of this, I hate to use the overused word bullying, but I think Trump is a bullier. And he keeps, you know, making the things harder and harder for people to get and being meaner and meaner. And so for people to just say, you know what, we don't need your stuff. I really like that, and I think that these organizations will do all right because there are enough private citizens. I mean, I'm not saying they don't need their government funding, but there are enough private citizens out there who care. Like, I know so many people who grew up, myself included, using Planned Parenthood for all of our women's health needs, and not for abortions. I want to see people be stronger instead of wah-wah-wahing all the time, you know what I mean? Like, oh, Trump did this and Trump did that, and, you know, this whole victim thing. Kind of like, you know, with people in mental health, you know, oh, this happened, that happened, and I'm such a, you know, sorry person. Like, people are starting to kind of grasp the other side of themselves and say, no, I'm going to find another way to do this without that bad influence. I hope that made sense.
It does make sense. Yeah,
Jimmy? I understand, and I think you're absolutely right. Planned Parenthood chose to be ethical rather than be unethical, and that was probably a tough choice for them. But the one thing I disagree with you about is that when you say Planned Parenthood needs the money, of course they need the money to provide the services, but the government needs Planned Parenthood. Mm. This is a collapse of the Title X service system. Mm. You know?
Okay. Yeah, so it's a deeper issue than what I'm addressing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but it's another way to look at this is that Planned Parenthood provides a valuable service that the government needs to be provided. And when it's not provided, all sorts of bad things happen. Sexually transmitted diseases go up, unwanted pregnancies go up, illegal backstreet abortions go up. All kinds of bad things are going to happen because the government has chosen to create a system that Planned Parenthood cannot operate.
All right.
Good point. Makes me think about more than I've already thought about. Thank you.
All right, Debbie, thank you much for your call. We really appreciate it. Thank you. Jimmy,
thanks, Debbie. Nice.
idea that we are moving toward a recession and Trump is petrified of that in an election year. Some say it's going to be 2021 before it takes hold, but it's coming. Do most economists believe it's coming? Trump's economists are just morons. Everybody knows that. Just television idiots. I mean, nobody listens to them, and nobody should listen to them. I mean, that's ridiculous about he's surrounded himself with people that have no damn clue about what's going on with the economy. But what do the experts say about an absolute, not only possibility of a recession, but a probability, Jimmy?
Well, I think that everybody knows that a recession will come at some point. Because that's what happens. We have these cycles. We have recession and growth. The question is how soon it will come. And I think many people expect it to come this year, and many other economists, it's kind of 50-50, expect it to come next year. I don't think anybody really says it's not coming. It's coming. You know, factory output is falling. Jobs for factory workers have fallen precipitously. Consumer confidence dropped 6.4% in 1 month. So it looks like, and consumers, frankly, have been propping up the economy. That's the only thing that's been propping up the economy so far. Trump has really managed to squander that Obama economy that he was handed in a fairly short time.
Let me ask you a little bit about the Congress coming back to do what? Will they ever take up gun control, as McConnell has suggested they might at least look at some of the red flag legislation? Possibly take a look at some background check legislation. I don't expect any of that. Do you?
Well, the last time we talked, and I have been more hopeful about this in the past, but the last time we talked, I made a prediction, and that was that Trump would reverse himself, which he has now done. And Mitch McConnell would say, well, we tried to work with those Democrats, but they wouldn't work with us, so nothing happened. It's their fault after, you know, doing nothing. So Mitch McConnell's thing is to pretend like it's somebody else's fault. Donald Trump's thing is to say he's going to do something and then retract from that. You know, and I think to some degree you have to understand that, you know, his voting base is shrinking, and the NRA delivers many of the people that are left. You know, the NRA, of course, is in business. Their business now is to sell guns, and their business now is to protect people who couldn't pass a background check from getting. So it's all very simple. That's all they want. They want people who can't pass a background check to be able to buy guns. They want people who are convicted of domestic violence crimes to be able to keep their guns. They want people convicted of assault to be able to keep their guns. And they, you know, that's what they're about. And it's all based on funding from the gun lobby, you know, gun manufacturers. So everybody's falling back into the corner that Republicans always fall into. And Trump has really retreated. You know, he's now saying, well, you got to understand it's mental health. And, of course, what everybody doesn't know is that we already have robust background checks. Well, that's BS, Don.
Let me ask you about the NRA, Jimmy. I mean, you take a look at it from your nation's capital perch. Mm-hmm. Is it in trouble? I mean, the corruption and a waste of millions and millions of dollars, LaPierre and his crazy wardrobe. I would assume that most hardworking people that send their donations and their dues to the NRA go, what the hell? What the hell?
You know, what's interesting about the NRA is it's full of corrupt, and they have a really big board that's a self-dealing board. They have always traditionally been a self-dealing board, which means the board gives business to its board members. And that's not how a nonprofit is supposed to run. Interestingly enough, the people that tried to stage the coup, including Oliver North, are just as, you know, crooked as the people who they tried to stage the coup over. And Wayne LaPierre is really emerging to be, you know, he wanted them to buy him a $7 million house because he didn't feel safe.
Of course.
You know, and I guess that was a highly secure golf course. And, you know, his tennis courts probably had a fence around them, so he felt much safer there.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not sure. but yeah, the other thing that's happening is, and we'll see what happens next year, is they're not getting what I think is a flood of Russian money that is disguised as lifetime member donations. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but I think that's where they got the $55 million that they gave to Trump in the last election. That they used for Trump in the last election. I think they're being investigated for that right now by a number of attorneys general. You know, they're chartered in Washington, D.C. I as a child, used to shoot on the headquarters rifle team. I have a long relationship with the NRA, and, you know, I'm one of those people the NRA left me. But now they are just in a mess. If they ever get audited, I can't imagine they will come out of it looking good.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what role they'll play in 2020. They'll play a role, there's no question about it. But what's left for them to play that we don't know about? So we'll find out.
Well, and right now, even right now, political operatives in the Republican Party are trying to determine exactly what role they will play and if they really have the power that they've always claimed to have, or that they even need to be listened to. Because I think a lot of, you know, rank and file Republicans are saying to themselves, 90% of people want legislation on guns. 90%, that's 90% of the people everywhere. And of course, the states with the highest gun death rates are the states that are the most pro-gun. Some of the lowest ones are the states in the Northeast, where they have reasonable gun legislation and protection and background checks.
We're talking with Jimmy Zuma, our Washington, D.C. correspondent. You may talk with him by dialing 790-2040. Jimmy, let me take a quick break and come back. We'll take you to the top of the hour. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Back in a moment. Jimmy Zuma is my co-host this hour in the John C. Scott Political Forum on this Tuesday, August 20th. He's in Washington, D.C. Jimmy, what's the deal with the president and Google?
Oh, my gosh, Jimmy.
Yeah, that's okay.
A psychologist named Robert Epstein, who used to be the editor at Psychology Today, published a study. He published it in on a website called Hacker Noon instead of in a peer-reviewed journal. And if you look at the study, you can see why. He basically picked out a small group of people and had them do Google searches, and he had another group that he got from a Mechanical Turk, which is an Amazon company where you can hire casual workers, rate their searches on a scale, and then, you know, the whole study was 95 people, and he determined that there was bias at Google, but clearly, and the bias favored Hillary Clinton, but clearly, what's missing from this study is the guy doesn't understand how Google searches work. And his complaint is that they are biased because there are more positive articles about Hillary Clinton. But, you know, obviously there are going to be more positive articles about Hillary Clinton. She's a better human being.
Well, sure.
You know? I mean, you have to consider so many other factors to understand this stuff. And so Trump tweeted this out as how it's proof that he really won the election, and my victory was even bigger than I had imagined, he said. That's the $3.5 million loss that has always irked him. You know, and even Epstein, when responding to what Trump said about him, he said, you know, that's not what I said, and that's not what I meant. And I don't have any evidence that Google manipulated the search result, and I don't have any evidence that they affected any votes. So, you know, that's where we are. Trump is grasping at any straw, this time from Fox Business. You know, my premise, and something we talk about on our podcast, is how Fox News isn't the president's channel. The president is Fox News's president, and they dictate what he says to an empty head every morning on Fox and Friends. And this is another example of that. This was a show on Fox Biz that had this guy in. And no other scientist believes that, even people that like him don't believe he's accurate. You know, Ramesh Srinivasan, who's a professor of information studies and actually knows how Google works, said, Robert Epstein and I agree a lot, but on this, his results his search results in voting is overly simplistic. And I think that's right. You know, search results are affected by a lot of things. And as I said, one of which is how good or bad the person you're searching.
Well, we're really talking about the president claiming that millions and millions of votes didn't come his way because of Google, right? He's blaming Google.
Google stole
them.
He said, wow, report just out. Google manipulated from 2.6 million to 16 million votes for Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. That's what he said. My victory was even bigger than thought. exclamation point. And of course, none of that is true.
None of that, of course, is true.
But so this is his, you know, just like he's blaming the Fed and journalists for the coming recession, he's, you know, blaming Google for his vote count loss. And this has always irked him. The two things that have really irked Trump is that he lost by 3.5 million citizen votes and that he didn't have anybody come to his inaugural. And these two things have already always irked him, and he's always lied about them. And this is just one more step in the trying to renovate the truth in his favor.
By the way, the president is considering a payroll tax cut amid the mounting economic problems here. Is that the way people are suggesting he go, or is he just making this up?
Well, they are considering it, and he is denying it. He's denying that they are considering it. White House officials are all denying that they're considering it, but we know they are considering it. And it's unclear whether they're talking about a payroll tax cut or a payroll withholding cut. So they would withhold less from your taxes, but you'd still have to pay it in the end. It'll be interesting to see what proposal they come out with. But this is just another example of how spooked Donald Trump is about the economy. He knows that the only chance he has of winning is if people think the economy is enough. And they overlook his racism, and they overlook his incompetence, and they overlook his mess that he has made with China, and vote because the stock market is up. But every other indicator is down. Like I said, factory jobs are down. Blue-collar jobs are down to a really low level now, 1% growth. And that was supposed to be his thing. He was going to open up all the factories. What he has done is systematically fail at that, worse and worse every year. So he really has one thing to run on, and it's this imaginary economy that's determined by the stock market, not the real economy that exists in the world. You know, farmers are starting to walk away from him. I think the Nebraska Farm Bureau said, quit it. Stop keeping us from selling things internationally. That's how we make money. And I think you'll see more of that. I think that that'll be reflected in Iowa. Where Elizabeth Warren, by the way, is the front runner for the Democratic caucus in Iowa at this point.
By the way, one of the top Democratic rivals, of course, Senator Elizabeth Warren, has argued that Trump's handling of the economy has been irresponsible and will push the U.S. into a recession. Former Vice President Joe Biden has said Trump's botched the trade war with China in a way that's hurt many U.S. companies. A lot of blame to go around here, Jimmy.
Well, farmers are going bankrupt at a record rate, I think a higher rate than they ever have, including other recessions, including the Bush recession, which was the worst one we've had since the Great Depression. So there is something wrong going on here, and it is affecting people who voted for Donald Trump. In the meantime, he's focused on trying to make sure that his religious voters can fire people for their religious beliefs. You know, he wants to fire women who are pregnant when they're not married. He wants to make it legal to fire them because they are not married.
Lord. I mean, we are turning back the clock, aren't we, to a very, very dark time.
Yeah, that's way far back. That's way far back. And, that, you know, that might be to, Old Testament days.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. That's exactly where we're going. Tell me this. Right. When the Congress comes back, are they going to do anything? I asked you this a little bit before about gun control. You said no. Is there anything they're going to do at all, period?
Nothing gets done in the election year. They'll do some things that sound good. They'll pass legislation that has a big name or, in the case of Republicans, they always pass legislation that its purpose is the exact opposite of how it's named. But the Democrats have already done their work. They've already passed an ethics bill. They've already passed an election protection bill. They've already passed a lot of important bills about sexual trauma and women and rape. They've really done their homework and done the job, and they've sent those bills to the Senate, and Mitch McConnell has sat on them.
The 20-some senators that are running for re-election that are the key to who will hold the majority in the upper chamber after 2020. Do you see any particular pitfalls for any of the 20, or are they all just doing pretty well, considering?
Well, I don't think they're doing really well. I think they're dropping like flies in Texas. We've had four elected officials from Congress and drop out in Texas and just give up. You know, people are encouraging Beto O'Rourke to get back in Texas because he's not going to win the presidency, number one. And number two, he could certainly win that Senate seat in Texas now.
Wow.
Texas is turning blue, even faster maybe than Arizona.
Yeah, that's astounding, isn't it, when you take a look at that?
Yeah. I mean,
no one ever expected that.
You know, from a long-time Republican state, a Republican hegemony in Texas for many, many years, and just in the last decade, they've fallen off a cliff. You know, the House, the lower chamber in Texas is now Democratic. I never thought I'd see that day.
Well, you take a look at the 20 senators that obviously up for re-election that have to win if the Republicans are to hold on to the upper chamber. And there's going to be some pretty close races there. There's no doubt about that. It's not going to be a given. They do seem to have some strength as they run again. But it's not a foregone conclusion, that's for sure.
Right. Even the ones that are expected to win and likely to win and are in strong Republican districts are going to win by much smaller margins than they're used to. And that's the Trump drag. Trump is dragging them down. He has managed to alienate educated women, but the new polling suggests that even women without a college degree are now trending Democratic. They're going to vote against Trump. So he is really dragging down the party. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
What's going on with Anthony Scaramucci rebelling against Trump? That's always been a curiosity to me. I mean, good Lord. With friends like that, you don't need enemies, but what's going on with him?
Well, whenever you see something like that happen, look for the book.
The book's you know, coming, right? Yeah.
He wants to hawk his book, and the best way to hawk your book is to get on TV, and the best way to get on TV is to do something unexpected. And I think that's what's going on with Scaramucci. I don't think he's really had a change of conscience, because I'm frankly not sure he has one.
Exactly. good point. Excellent.
But he is certainly aiming to sell a book, and you know, it's music to my ears to hear one of Trump's devotees backstab him, because that's what's been happening to the devotees.
All right, before you leave, you got to update me on your blog with the state senator Victoria Steele. What's going on?
Podcast is going great. I'm just editing our latest episode, episode 9. You know, we don't have a huge number of listeners yet, but it's between the first week and the fourth week, we've gone up 435%, and we have listeners in the United States, of course, and Ireland.
Cameroon.
you know, all over the world. So it's really been remarkable to me how we've been able to develop an audience and move up in the podcast ratings, and it just couldn't be going great. We got our first sponsor who's going to sponsor 3 shows for us, and we're really happy about that. And things are moving right along. Victoria, you know, she used to be the silky voice of Saturdays, and now she's the silky voice of Wait What? Politics with Zuma and Steele.
Wow. So cool. She's a great lady. We like her a great deal, and she's smart. Yeah. And she's the only person ever won a primary race with 99% of the vote and had an opponent. 99%. How do you get that?
Let's talk about her for a second. She just started her next Senate campaign. We should keep an eye on her. She had a terrific run this legislative session, passed a lot of important bills, was involved in the passing of others. You know, the missing and indigenous woman study, extending the rights of rape victims to file lawsuits. And, you know, she's just involved in all kinds of good things. She was intimately involved in the water, the Colorado River water plan. So she's really delivered. And I hope she gets another term, because I think she really deserves it.
I agree. Well, we're going to be following the Democratic primary race for mayor in Tucson. It's become so bizarre with dark money from Rain Romero. Wow.
Money.
Over $1 million have been thrown into this race in the last 3 weeks, and it's never happened before. We've never seen anything like this. We have no idea whether it's going to determine whether she can buy this mayor's race or not, but she's certainly trying.
Yeah.
She's got
we'll
the money.
See what happens.
We absolutely
we'll see what happens. Everybody's got the money, and it's all kind of not saying vote for this candidate. It's saying don't vote for that candidate.
That's exactly what it's saying. Jimmy Zuma, thanks for being with us. It's great talking with you. Thanks for covering the Capitol for us. We'll talk with you again very soon. Thank you.
Oh, John, you know, we're moving Zop Studio to a new location.
Really?
I'm going to miss this old station, but we're moving to Northeast. Won't be able to do your show next week because we'll be setting up the new studio, but
no problem.
I hope to come with you next time with a view of the Washington Monument.
Wow, that'll be cool. That'll be very cool.
Yeah.
All right, good, Jimmy.
Yeah, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right, you bet. Thank you very much. Jimmy Zuma covers the nation for us from the nation's capital. Coming up in the next hour of the John C. Scott Political Forum, Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, talks about the dark money and the Democratic primary race for mayor of Tucson. Shelley Fishman talks about, are we moving to a recession? How soon? When? And how deep will it be? Tom Przewski will be with us. A member of the executive committee of the Pima County Democrats talks about the mayor's race, the most unusual mayor's primary we've ever seen. Dark money to the tune of $1 million flowing into the campaign for Raheena Romero, the Ward 1 councilperson, against C. Farley, the longtime legislator, and Randy Dorman, the business lady running for mayor and seeking the Democratic nomination. Stay tuned next for Jeff Rogers, Shelley Fishman, and Tom Przewski. This portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Call Mike Emery at 323-8650. You know, I've chosen Mike Emery to fix my car. So pleased with the repair job that he did on it. There are hundreds of choices you have when your car breaks down. But there's only one Mike Emery and only one Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You can call him at 323-8650. All of his service technicians are ASE certified. Here's an individual that is an honest mechanic that does a great job with your car and only charges you a very fair price. Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works, 1046 North Beverly, sponsor of this portion of the John C. Scott Political Forum. Back following the news at the top of the hour, KVOI The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Give us a call at 790-2040. Join our conversation.